in my Antonio Brown is always right t-shirt. And I think that's topical, isn't it?
Oh my goodness. You know, how crazy of a situation is it? I mean, I thought it was crazy at first, you know, what was going on Sunday, but then you see what he posts or his statement through his agent, and you're like, well, is Tampa Bay actually at fault here? And then Tampa Bay says, no, he was cleared to play. And I mean, this has really turned into a fiasco.
Yeah, and I think the bottom line to that is if they can verify the injury that he actually had, because he claims that he's got a report. Now, does he have x-rays? And if so, but even so, even if he had the injuries, once he took off his shirt and threw that into the crowd, his gloves threw that in the crowd, what was his next move? Dance him in the end zone.
Yeah.
So that argument kind of comes and goes, doesn't it?
Yeah, you would think that on a bum ankle, you wouldn't be jumping up and down in the end zone.
No. And I guess it's just lucky that he was on an away game instead of at home, because then the whole place could have erupted, plus or minus.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, that would have been insane. I mean, I'm sure he would have gotten stuff thrown at him. I mean, they might have had to stop the game. I'm sure of it at some point. But, I mean, it you know, in a way, I really feel bad for him. But at the same time, your reputation behooves you. And if you allow your reputation to get to a point where, you know, you have a bad reputation, you rarely get any sort of sympathy from anybody. And I feel like Antonio Brown has had a lot of chances, and he's, you know, for lack of a better word, has kind of just ruined those.
Absolutely. And any relationship is only two things, truth and trust.
Mm.
And if you can't believe somebody, if you can't trust somebody, you take a marriage, for instance. When your wife or your husband catches you in lies, then everything beyond that is questioned whether it's a lie. Now, if Antonio Brown can prove that he's got all this ligament damage and cartilage damage, or you know, he's got a stress factor or whatever, then absolutely he's on the right there. But just looking at him hopping up and down the end zone, that to me says, well, I don't know. He looks perfectly fine to me. But if he can prove all that, I'd jump on his bandwagon in 5 seconds.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just a matter of, you know, it being difficult to actually, you know, side with him, you know, just given his past. But, you know, moving on to another situation that is, it's interesting. And Baker has vehemently come out and said this is absolutely false. But this idea, rumor going around that Baker Mayfield and Kevin Stefanski have been going at it over the course of this year, or have had some differences. What exactly is true in this? Have you heard anything, Barry, in regards to their relationship being in turmoil over the course of the season?
Yeah, and they have a beat writer named Mary Kay Cabot of Cleveland.com, and she's all into everything. And she's the one that broke the story of it. She cites unnamed sources who describe tensions between Mayfield and Coach Stefanski, which, you think about it, Coach Stefanski was NFL Coach of the Year last year. So that's kind of odd to go from such highs and such lows in just two seasons. But her sources are claiming that there's a low-key vibe that is emanating from Baker Mayfield and is permeating the offense, which I can see. They're only averaging 15 points a game. Of course they've got problems.
Yeah. I mean, the way that things have gone, and also with Baker being hurt, I mean, to be honest with you, thinking about this, should Baker have even been playing? In a way, I almost think that he damaged his value by trying to play through being hurt. And obviously, he's not playing in this final game against the Bengals because he's getting the surgery. But if anything, did this hurt him more by trying to play through this injury in terms of the long run? Because now, I think that Cleveland might have to ask themselves, is Baker the guy, or is Baker himself with these rumors of, you know, of tension between him and Coach Stefanski, is he going to want out of town?
Yeah, and all references, Baker has said that he is ready to play and he makes the final decision for each Sunday. He only missed one game. So if he only missed one game and made the final decision, he is deciding to play and to try to up his worth because he's in his contract year. He's hoping for that Josh Allen, $40 million, $35 million, like Wilson of Seattle. He's hoping for that kind of a payday. So he really rolled the dice. Now, what he should have done in hindsight is once he found out that his shoulder was so bad, is he should have had the surgery, been out the season, and then when the contract sessions rolled around in the off season, then the Browns, because he had a great second half last year, they went to the playoffs, they won a playoff game, they almost beat the Chiefs, which meant they could have been in the AFC Championship, and who knows, and they were hot at the end. So in his negotiating, they could have said, well, we think this is going to be the franchise player of the future, and we think that he's going to be, you know, one of the top five in the league. Instead, he has regressed. He's throwing interceptions. He's throwing turnovers. He's overthrowing guys. He's short-arming guys. He's not going through his progressions. Now, in fairness, he hasn't had all five of his offensive line there. He's had 4 and 3 in games. And last game, he had a rookie playing right tackle, which I have no clue why after he was sacked after the third time they didn't put a tight end over there or leave a fullback in the game and help him out, but they left him out there on an old pro T.J. Watt. I mean, who's going to block T.J. Watt? Yeah. I think two guys can. But ever since then, now Mayfield is sitting there with bad numbers instead of what-if numbers, and when they negotiate that contract, I don't think it's going to be happy at all.
Yeah, and I think that Baker is one of the quarterbacks that, you know, as cocky as he may come across, I think playing with confidence is a really big thing, especially, you know, for him where, you know, you've been doubted a lot and being able to put up consistent numbers. And then, of course, playing hurt too. I think that stress ought to weigh on his brain a little bit, you know, knowing that he might not be able to contort himself enough or twist his body enough to really get as much power on his throws. And I think that's even been mentioned, you know, in some of the broadcasts in regards to that left shoulder and not being able to drive through. But what do you think is next for the Browns? Do you think he actually ends up getting a deal? Or do you think that the Browns are just as hesitant as ever to extend Baker Mayfield to one of those big deals like a Josh Allen?
I'm going to have to refer to my magic eight ball here. Let me shake it up and see what happens. Wait a minute. Here it comes. I really don't know. I'm going to do an article that gives 4 veterans that the Browns could bring in and trade. Then I'm going to do another article on 4 rookies that they could get in the second or the third round to come in and compete with him. They've got Case Keenum on the bench, who's had 63 starts, but they haven't used him but one game. He'll play this weekend, but apparently they don't think a healthy Keenum is better than an injured Mayfield. Otherwise, they would have been using him all this time. So there is no telling what they're going to do, but they're definitely going to have to negotiate with him. And I don't think it'd surprise anybody if they trade him. I don't think it'd surprise anybody if they kept him. That's my opinion.
So the NFL, and this will lead into, you know, the combine as well, but the NFL coming out with these, well, they came out with the memo, of course, about, you know, interview conduct and how teams could be fined a substantial amount of money, also potentially lose a draft pick for interview conduct at the combine, but also changing some of the combine rules, drills rather, in terms of, you know, dedicating drills towards a player's position in, you know, the routes that they run or to better simulate game player movements. Do you think that is the smartest thing to do for the NFL? Of course, it's a little bit different, but I think it makes some sense just in regards to evaluating a prospect.
I absolutely do. It's different when you're throwing. There's nobody in your face, nobody chasing you, not having to step up into the pocket, not having to exit the pocket and still be looking downfield to see if you've got anybody open. That should have been done a long time ago. And things change like that. I remember back in the day, everybody timed players in the 100-yard dash. And then Paul Brown with the Browns, he timed everybody in the 40-yard dash. And his assumption was that nobody's going to run 100 yards in a single game. But players can run 40 yards in a single game. And so that reset the standard, and I think with the combine, that's probably going to reset the standard on its own.
So I know that, you know, we're getting to that time of year, especially if your team is out of the playoff picture, where mock drafts start to really gain steam and everything like that. If you were to pick a position that you think the Browns need the most right now, CBS Sports, I'm looking at that one, for example, they've got the Browns taking Garrett Wilson at pick number 13. But is there a particular need that you think the Browns should address in the first couple of rounds in this upcoming draft?
Absolutely. And wide receiver is probably going to be the number one on the list. I don't know if they would go first round wide receiver, even though Garrett Wilson is a phenomenal, phenomenal athlete. Alabama's got a couple of receivers that could go about. The Browns are going to draft anywhere from 10th to 16th and probably around the 12th, 13th slot. And I think that people are going to expect him to go wide receiver, but the Browns are made to run. Their offensive line is all excellent run blockers and only subpar inadequate pass blockers. They have a fullback. Very few teams have a fullback. In fact, right now on the roster, they've got two fullbacks. So they're built to run. They got Nick Chubb, they've got D'Ernest Johnson, and they got Kareem Hunt. Well, all of those are runners. And so all their tight ends are made for blocking first, receiving second. So I really think that they're going to go defensive line in the first round. No, there's no telling that Jadeveon Clowney is going to come back. Maybe defensive tackle, maybe a pass rusher. Because in the second round, and there could be Jalen Tolbert from South Alabama sitting there when the Browns draft, and that's about a good slot for him. Tolbert is playing in the Senior Bowl this year. So that's an excellent way to go there and evaluate him and see what he's got. Also, Calvin Austin of Memphis, Alex Pierce of Cincinnati. So there are some really good receivers that can be taken in the second round. Cleveland's an analytics team, and I don't think analytics say take a wide receiver or a running back or a quarterback in the first round. It does say take a defensive end, a pass rusher, and it does say take a cornerback, but don't spend big money on a wide receiver if you don't have to.
Yeah, and you mentioned the Senior Bowl, of course, that just down the road in Mobile. I mean, if you look at the roster and the invites for this, I mean, there are some really, really intriguing prospects at almost at every single position, really, of guys who are coming down to Mobile who are going to partake in the Senior Bowl. I mean, you've got a number of quarterbacks. Of course, the quarterback conversation is always an interesting one because you've got, you know, teams who need a quarterback, are they willing to jump into the first round? And also, you know, the talent doesn't necessarily, I don't know, is there a quarterback who maybe Kenny Pickett, but is there anybody else that from your perspective, of course, the Browns might they might draft a quarterback, but they also might not. But is there one that I think Kenny Pickett is the one who would be picked in the first round that actually fits into the first round grade? But is there anybody else who you think is grade-wise worthy of being selected in the first round from that quarterback position?
I don't think he'll be taken in the first round, but it'll be close. I like Malik Willis of Liberty. And now,
Okay.
the knock on him is that it's the competition that he faced. But you take somebody like Carson Wentz, you take somebody like Drew Brees, who played for Purdue. There are quarterbacks that have not played against top-notch talent that have gone on and had decent, if not exceptional, careers. But Kenny Pickett's probably the best one. He's at the Senior Bowl. When you're talking about the Senior Bowl, Alabama running back Robinson
Yeah.
is going to be playing, Brian Robinson. And then Florida's got their running back, Dameon Pierce. Both of those are excellent runners. And then you got Georgia's James Cook. So you've got three really good running backs that are going to be playing at the Senior Bowl this year.
Yeah, absolutely, and certainly looking forward to covering that. The Senior Bowl is on February 5th. It'll be good to get on down there if we're able to. I'm planning on it. Hopefully, everything falls into line to be able to do that. Of course, having to jump through the hoops of COVID, of course, but looking at some of the playoff scenarios right now, I know, of course, we still have some things that need to be shaken out. But what team do you think? Well, rather, let me rephrase it. What matchup are you more intrigued by? And you know, we'll go conference by conference, but right now it would be the Chiefs playing the Chargers, Bengals playing the Colts, and Bills playing the Patriots. Which one of those first round matchups to you is the most eye appealing, I guess?
Well, the Chiefs have certainly come around the second half, and I would never bet against the Chiefs. I think that's the one team that I would never bet against. You've got other teams like the Cowboys and that'll break your heart, and then the next week they'll beat somebody good. Then you got somebody like Green Bay, and Green Bay seems to play down to their competition. So I would never bet against the Chiefs. The Chiefs-Chargers would be excellent. Of course, they've already played each other twice, so they already know what's going on with their team. They're well scouted on that. I said last week, the one team that intrigues me in the AFC, though, is the Tennessee Titans. With the Chiefs losing last week to your Bengals and then Tennessee winning, the Chiefs lost the number one seed 2 weeks before the season ends. And who has gained that, although they're both 11-5, is Tennessee. Tennessee is now the number one seed. Now, here's the thing. The Chiefs played the Broncos the last game, which the Broncos are a subpar team. But the Titans play the Texans, so you know they're going to keep that number one seed. And as I explained last week, into the playoffs, I fully expect when they come back for their very first game, they'll have a first round bye, Derrick Henry will be suiting up.
Yeah.
So here you've got the number one team not playing a week, coming back with a stud running back. That's who I'm going to be watching.
In the NFC, obviously, I think the Packers are locked at the number one seed for one and for two. They having to go through Lambeau is always tough. The Rams would play the Eagles, the Buccaneers would play the 49ers, and the Cowboys would play the Cardinals. Out of those teams, which one do you think is the biggest threat to the Packers at this moment in time?
I'd have to say either Tampa Bay or Arizona. Like I explained about the Cowboys could put up 45 points on anybody and lose 45-48. So they're just a roller coaster. They're absolutely a roller coaster. They've got turnover problems. They've got receivers that will come in and out of being hurt or on the COVID list. But I would not count. I know Arizona's the fifth seed. I know they're 11-5 and they've had some problems lately. But I would not count them out as far as being in the top one of the top or being in the NFC Championship game.
Well, again, Barry Shuck of Dogs by Nature. You have an idiom for us.
One thing I want to say is congratulations on your Cincinnati Bengals. You think about the fifth, sixth week, and the Baltimore Ravens were just dominating that division, and the Browns were hanging on. The Bengals were like way down at the bottom, and they just kind of stayed steady and stayed steady. Their offense was always awesome, and Ja'Marr Chase is all world, and good. Kudos for the person that decided not to take the offensive tackle and take Chase instead. He's gold jacket already. But for them to stay with it. Now, it helped that the Steelers and the Browns and the Ravens all fell apart. But when they're falling apart, your team still has to stay together, and your team still has to gain wins. And for them to be 10-6 is just remarkable. Do you have a happy dance? I want to see it.
I don't necessarily have a dedicated dance, but I will tell you that when Evan McPherson made that field goal, I was so excited. I was fist pumping. I was doing about everything possible because I think the Bengals, I don't want to say they're as bad as the Cowboys necessarily, but they tend to play to the level of the competition a little bit. They lost to the Jets earlier this year, but then when they played good teams, they were pretty well dominated by the Chargers. I mean, they fell behind quickly early and tried to make a comeback of it, but they couldn't get going. So for them to go out and play as well as they did, and I think, as you mentioned, the offense has always been a threat, but defensively, they've improved a lot on the season. And to hold Patrick Mahomes to only 50 yards passing in the second half, I think was absolutely remarkable. As good as Joe and Ja'Marr played in that game, I think the defense to only hold Patrick Mahomes to 50 passing yards in that second half was remarkable.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, can you give me a who day?
Who do you think going to beat them Bengals? Nobody. I'm holding out hope for the postseason, Barry. All I want is the playoff win. That's all I want. The Super Bowl would be great, yeah. but I want the one playoff win. That's all I want.
Yeah, maybe the Patriots and the Bengals will play for the AFC Championship. Wouldn't that be a
that would be crazy, wouldn't it? That would be wild.
Okay. I'm going to mix it up a little bit. Instead of giving you an idiom, I'm going to give you, in honor of your team, I'm going to give you three things you probably didn't know about the Bengals.
Awesome.
Next week, I'm going to give you three things you probably didn't know about the Patriots.
Okay.
To honor you and Chad's team. So the first one I'm going to give you is about the Bengals themselves. The Bengals were awarded an American Football League expansion franchise in 1968. They went to Paul Brown, and Paul Brown didn't want to do it until he found out that the NFL and the AFL were going to merge in 1970. They gave him four choices, or four cities: Seattle, Atlanta, Columbus, and Cincinnati. And he whittled it down to Cincinnati and Columbus. And the only reason he chose Cincinnati, and why he said he chose Cincinnati, because they already had the Cincinnati Reds and had plans on building a stadium, which ended up being in Riverfront.
Mm.
So that's how they got a team. Now, how they got the name Bengals was Paul, in 1936 and 1937, the second American Football League was invented. And there was a Cincinnati Bengals team in that league. Now, there was also a Cleveland Rams team in that league, and they left the American Football League when they folded in 1937 and joined the NFL. So that's where the Los Angeles Rams came from, was another league. So Paul Brown knew that there was a link to the past with professional football in Cincinnati with the old Cincinnati Bengals team. That's why he named them the Cincinnati Bengals.
Wow.
Now, I'm going to give you the second thing you probably didn't know. The original Cincinnati Bengals team was coached by a guy by the name of Pennington, and he had coached lots of amateur teams around the Cincinnati area because there were teams everywhere, and we'd have a Pensacola team, and we'd play Crestview, and the next week we play Birmingham, and that's how the NFL started. Well, how he named his Bengals team was he was in a friend of his mother's kitchen eating, and they had newspaper writers had suggested a bunch of names, and they had a name the team contest, and the one that won was the Cincinnati Elephants, and he didn't like it. He didn't like any of the names. So in this friend of his mother's kitchen, there was a stove, a Pensacola stove maker called Floyd Wells and Company that used the Bengal trademark. So Pennington looked at the old stove that she had, and right on the range, there was a picture of a big tiger with teeth snarling and everything, and underneath it, it said Bengal. And he said, "What the hell is a Bengal?" And after he researched it, he found that it was a Bengal snarling tiger's face. So he named them the Cincinnati Bengals. So that's the second thing. The third thing is where did Hootay come from?
Okay.
Well, we all know it's Hootay. Hootay. Hootay say going to beat them Bengals. Well, this originated in Louisiana. And Louisiana, they say Hootat. And Hootat is a Cajun French pronunciation of who is that. So when you knock on the door, they'd say Hootat. It's Cajun people that had been saying it long before a football crowd was ever assembled. So this got started in at Southern University in Baton Rouge in the 60s. They started saying the Hootat chant. Before long, high schools and other universities were saying it. In 1979, the Saints started using it, the Hootat. It was a catchy crowd pleaser.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in 1981, so this is 2 years later, the Hudafall Brewing Company in Cincinnati, which was a German brewer, celebrated the Bengals had just had recent success. They came out with a limited beer can called Hootay, but it wasn't H-O-O. It was H-U, which is the short for a Hudafall, H-U-D-A. And on the words on the can, it was printed, "Who they think gonna beat them Bengals?"
That's awesome. That's so cool.
That year, Cincinnati won the AFC Championship game and then lost to the San Francisco 49ers in the Super Bowl.
And then from there on out, yeah, it's been used. That is all. I know that there. My first Bengals T-shirt said "Who Day" on it. So yeah, that
right.
has been well enriched. And every single time the Bengals win, I always watch it. They post it on Twitter. Zach Taylor goes into the locker room and they do a "Who Day" chant, and it is, of course, there. I mean, somebody's going to beat them. I mean, at some point at the regular season, but I mean. Every single time you win, you always chant the who day think gonna beat them Bengals. Nobody. That's awesome.
Yeah, everybody's got their own shtick. You're at a Philadelphia Eagles game, and at some point they're gonna break out in the Fly Eagles Fly.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. Well, Barry, as always, a real pleasure talking to you, and I'm looking forward to what you got next week with the Patriots, and also as we get closer to. Knowing our playoff matchups and looking ahead at all the things that we've got coming up in the National Football League. Appreciate the time as always.
Yeah, the pleasure's mine, Drew. Talk to you later.